So thank you very much, Brother Teo, for your understanding despite, you know, limited number of participants. And over here at NBC, you know, we probably by end of the of this year or even by November end, December onwards, we'll be holding the activities in Aman Perdana. That is new, that's the new monastery. So the new management, new committee may will take over, and now we will let them decide what they plan to do. All right. So if there is any sort of changes, then, you know, we'll again talk to Brother Teo on what they plan to, what arrangement. Anyway, for tonight's topic, understanding the importance of how to let go the mind by not focusing on anything in cultivation. Now, we all know that cultivation, it's actually about the development of the mind, and without the mind, there is no enlightenment. Enlightenment is in the mind. So how is it that by not focusing on anything, you know, so what are we to do? What are we to do? The mind has to be sort of, as we understand in theory, instructions, we understand that what we should do, and these are the guidelines and how we sort of train the mind. But not by not focusing on anything, is there a training of the mind? And I think that I leave it to Brother Teo to explain to you the deeper meaning of this. Right? So as usual, let us take refuge and observe the precept before Brother Teo takes over the mic. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veeramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veeramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara veeramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Mosavada veeramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sura meraya majapamadatthana veeramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. Okay, very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. We meet again. So I understand your center has to shift. So according to Brother T, either end of this month or the following month. Anyway, we let things be. Whatever your new committee decide, we just have to abide. So no problem. And also just now, I'd like to thank Brother T for the good introduction. So tonight's topic is a bit unique. I don't know how Brother Gan got this topic. Then when I receive it, I just reply, okay. That's why I didn't put sadhu or anything down there. I just say okay. Because I realized over the years, when people send me title or topic to talk on, I find the topic very strange because it doesn't reflect the Dhamma, the understanding. So most of the time in the early day, I try to change the topic, suggest something better. Then later on I realize, better let it be, so that when I come for the sharing or the talk, I can explain that is better, because somehow it must be something that is quite popularly accepted. Otherwise, they won't choose this title. Do you have any idea how the title come about, Verde? Or you also don't know? Anyway, for the benefit of the recording, I'd like to read to you the title. Understanding the importance of how to let go of the mind by not focusing on anything in cultivation. So let us analyze this topic before we start. What is this word? This word, let go. If you understand the true meaning, you can only let go of something if you have the understanding, the wisdom. And when you have the wisdom and the understanding, you cannot hold. You are not deluded by it, deceived by it. You will not attach, you will not cling, you will not hold. So there is no need to let go. Can you all follow? You only have to let go if you are holding on to something there. True or not? If you hold because of delusion, that person who holds can never, never want to let go. Unless he is forced not to hold. But he will still have the delusion behind. He will continue to think about it and want it. That craving is very strong. So that is the first thing that you have to be careful. There is no such thing as practice letting go. I don't know what about other people. Maybe they thought this is a good topic. So it sounds logical. Like I used to share with you all, whatever that is logical may not be the truth. So this is like practicing how to let go the mind. So another type of practice. Practice means what? Method, technique. So you have to understand this very important understanding. It has become a method and a technique, then you need a mind to do it. Then if you practice letting go, you are deluding yourself. Because without wisdom, you will hold. You cannot do the reverse. But the moment you have the understanding and the awakening, you no longer deluded. That's why you cannot hold. When you cannot hold, you don't have to let go. So that is the point that people fail to understand. The other thing is, by not focusing on anything in cultivation, means this is the method that you practice by not focusing the mind on anything during cultivation or in cultivation. Like Brother Teo said, it may sound, Brother Te mentioned just now, it may sound very confusing and very difficult for people to understand. Because you need to use the mind. And like he said, it is the mind that awakens. So if you don't have a mind and you don't focus, then what are you to do? But this particular so-called method or technique or concept come about because recently there is a new understanding. You don't focus and concentrate your mind. If you do that, it becomes energy field. It has to be a free mind. But a free mind doesn't mean you focus or you don't focus. You have to understand what is a free mind. If you understand that, then meditation becomes very simple. But when you don't understand, you try to use a concept of a mind doing meditation, then this mind has to do something, like Brother Tay said. It has to either focus or follow certain instruction, method or technique. That's why I always share with you all this very important fact. Method and technique or object of meditation is not the meditation. It's just an object of meditation or a skillful means, a series of instructions to do things, to train your mind, to develop the mind. So having this preliminary understanding, now I will zero in on the topic today. Because there is a lot of flaw in this title. First, we don't practice letting go of mind. The moment you awaken, you have the wisdom, your mind will not grasp, will not cling. So no need to let go. You will know what to do. Then this non-focusing is like you all call the choiceless awareness. You don't choose, you don't focus, you just maintain awareness. If you understand it that way, it's not too bad. It's a lot better than those who don't understand. Yeah. But if you use a mind to go and do this as a concept, as a method and a technique, then you completely deviate because you fail to understand. Being aware doesn't need to have an active mind that is focusing or noting or verbalizing, chattering, doing all this. This is the mundane mind, thinking mind, conditionalizing mind. To do this type of non-focusing, you must have that free mind, that true mind, the mind that is without thought, the silent mind in sati. And that silent mind will not focus. The silent mind is just aware. You have the understanding, then you will be successful in developing the meditation. So now I will teach you a few ways to understand things. I have been giving you all a lot of what they call important pointers to meditation. If you can recall, the first thing you need to understand is meditation must be done with understanding. Must be done with understanding. If you don't understand what you are doing in the name of meditation, you cannot develop the meditation. So this is the most important understanding. Meditation must be done with understanding. Without understanding, you are wasting your time. You are doing things without proper direction, without proper understanding. And you cannot do something that you don't understand. Like I used to explain last time. Let's say you have a problem. Yeah? But you didn't even know what is your problem. Then you go and approach maybe a monk or a teacher. Then you say, okay, I can help you solve your problem. You meditate. Then he gives you a series of instruction, method, technique, object of meditation. He said, you just do. One day, when you become enlightened, your problem is gone. What do you think? If you don't even know your problem, so how are you going to do the meditation? But at least if you know what your problem is, then you can approach it, isn't it? Then you can resolve it, isn't it? So meditation is the same. So you have to understand what is meditation. So to have the understanding means you must know, you must understand what is meditation. What is meditation as taught by the Buddha? Huh? Because this is a very loose word. Meditation, you check the dictionary, whatever mental training is meditation. If you train your mind to do something, then that becomes a meditation. So just like loving kindness meditation, metta bhavana. If you train your mind to radiate love and metta, then it becomes loving kindness meditation. If you do qigong, yeah, or yoga, then it becomes qigong or yoga meditation. Then if you train yourself to focus and concentrate, it becomes samatha meditation. Then if you develop what they call insight meditation, I-N-S-I-G-H-T, then if they call it vipassana. Vipassana consists of two words. Vi is the characteristics of nature, the three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, non-self or empty nature or existence. Then passana is to insight into. So this vipassana is not a method or a technique. It's any type of meditation that can lead to this awakening. You can call it vipassana. So vipassana is not a fixed method or a technique. It's an understanding that leads to this insight, awakening. I will explain all this later. Huh? Then the second part you need to clearly understand is nothing free your mind except what? Nothing frees your mind except? Ah, very good. Except wisdom. So I use another ink. Except wisdom. So when you have this understanding, you will know what I meant just now. Without wisdom, your mind cannot liberate, cannot free. That's why you have to practice letting go. That's why all these concepts come out. All these are wrong understanding. How can you practice letting go? That's why they say how to let go the mind. By doing something, not focusing. You don't focus, what do? You note, you chatter, you verbalize. This is not focusing, is it? Do you think that is meditation? Do you think it can lead to relinquishment? Awakening? No way, understand? So it's not only non-focusing. It's non-chattering, understand? No verbalization, no arising of the thought. The mundane mind. You're just silent, aware. And I have explained this all before. So tonight's topic is very good because it's only one topic. I can use the whole 1 hour to explain it. So I will explain to you. Because in the earlier session, I think we got too many things to understand. So I have to move a bit fast. So tonight, hopefully, yeah, with the recording, things will become clear. So these two are most important. So from here, how do we move? First, we have to ask ourselves, you must understand what is meditation according to the Buddha. So what is meditation according to the Buddha? Yeah? Now we start. Based on your Dhamma knowledge, all the years of practice, training, learning. In the teaching, where do you find the important key pointers to explain to you clearly what is meditation according to the Buddha? Give it a try. Yeah. Don't worry about right and wrong. Just give it a try. I already explained many times. Yeah? What did the Buddha mention before he died? I give you a hint. Strive on with heedfulness. Why did he ask you to do that? He didn't ask you to strive on to become enlightened. No. He says, strive on with heedfulness. And you have to understand what is this word, heedfulness, apamada. Means you have to diligently develop this mind. This is the mind that you must have. So this is the meditative mind. I rub it off. This is the meditative mind. Because after this, the Buddha mentioned under Dhammapada verse 21, verses 21, 22, and 23. He pointed out in a very clear manner the same message. What is Dhammapada verse 21? Yeah? What is Dhammapada verse 21? It's about heedfulness, isn't it? Can somebody say it out? Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. And the heedless are as if dead. And this is very clear. If you are not heedful throughout the day in your life, you are as if dead. You don't stand a chance. That's why his message is just strive on with heedfulness. Without heedfulness, you are dead. But when you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. Because he said, the heedful never die. And heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Means you go beyond birth and death. You will never die. Then verse 22, he reinforced it. He said, those wise ones, distinctly able to differentiate clearly between heedlessness and heedfulness, the wise will intend on heedfulness. They will never allow their mind to be heedless. And when they do that, they rejoice in the realm of the Aryas. The Aryas are the enlightened one. That's why they will become enlightened one and rejoice up there with the Aryas or the enlightened beings. Then Dhammapada verse 23 confirm everything, even explain to you what heedfulness is. Then the Buddha said under verse 23, Dhammapada verse 23, he said, the ever mindful, constantly meditative, and steadfast one, if you hold on to these two cultivations, you will realize the unborn, state of the unconditioned state of Nibbana. So this is very, very clearly explained in the teaching. So what is heedfulness is very important. Heedfulness is equal to what? Ever mindful? Mindful? And constantly meditative. So constantly meditating means constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. Eh? Noble Eightfold Path. Because Noble Eightfold Path, as explained by the Buddha, is the meditation under the fourth Noble Truth. He said, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, the realization of enlightenment, Nibbana. So, with this understanding, the cultivation becomes simple. First, we have to train our mind to be mindful. Because to develop this ever-mindful state, you have to train your mind. Train mind to be mindful. Then, stabilize it. To be ever mindful. So this is the part that cultivator fail to understand. Practitioner fail to understand. So when you can do that, you can fulfill one aspect of heedfulness. That's why all of meditation stress on the training of the mind to be mindful. Then stabilize it. To be ever mindful. To stabilize it, you don't go and focus and concentrate. Because human beings' problem is they cannot be in a state of mindfulness as a free mind. That's why they need something to hold the mind, to anchor the mind. That's how they come up with all the method and the technique. And they don't tell you, they don't explain to you, because they themselves also don't know. They have been learning from people who tell them to note this, note that. Do anapanasati. Do rising and falling. Do chanting. But what they are doing, they don't understand. So if you develop meditation without understanding, you will have this problem. You become gullible. You think you're meditating. You think you do vipassana. Well, vipassana cannot be done. Vipassana is an insight. You have to awaken. You have to insight into phenomena through the silent mind, the meditative mind. The sati, the awareness. And this sati has to be ever mindful, not only in formal meditation, in the midst of life, so that you can be heedful throughout the day. Because the Buddha mentioned it very clearly under Dhammapada verse 21. Heedfulness is very important. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless, and the heedful never die. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The moment you are not mindful, you become heedless. You are lost in thought. The moment you are mindful and aware, you don't have thought. Because mindfulness is an awareness before the knowing, before the arising of thought process, thinking. So you not only try to develop meditation by not focusing, you have to have the type of mind that is not verbalizing. Not noting. Noting is verbalizing. Not chattering. Not trying to do this and do that in the name of meditation. Then creating a lot of thought inside the meditation. Reacting to all the pain, the numbness. The various types of restlessness of mind. All the mental hindrance that you encounter, you cannot understand. Then you try to control, suppress, or focus, or push away and do away. When you're sleepy, you try to give rise to virya. You are doing all those things wrongly. Well, virya has to be developed as a spiritual faculty before you meditate. You cannot, when you have sleepiness, sloth and torpor, lethargic mind, then you try to keep yourself awake. No use. It's like you have an emergency, you need to go to a WC. You need to maybe clear your bowel. Then only you look for a toilet. That is not the way. Or some worse deal. Then only you want to build your toilet. So all this is cultivating without understanding. Then it will lead to all those gullible cultivator or gullible way of meditating. Yeah. So this aspect is very important. Then after you have trained your mind to be ever mindful, and you can be in this state in the midst of life throughout the day, that is the beginning of real meditation, daily mindfulness. And during that moment in life, you have to use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. That's why these two, you combine together, it becomes heedfulness. And you can only be heedful if you are mindful and your mindfulness is very stable. That's why all meditation need to understand this. So I ask you a question now. Can you practice mindfulness? Very simple question, isn't it? Because when you say, I want to meditate, teach me how to meditate. That is your standard answer, isn't it? Or standard question, isn't it? You ask for? What are you asking for? Teach me how to meditate. When you say that, what are you asking? You are looking for a method and a technique, isn't it? That's how everybody do that. So method and technique never defines the meditation. Methods and technique. And object of meditation. Never defines the meditation. You must always understand this. Then you will not be gullible. When you can understand this, you become very different. What is method? What is technique? What is an object of meditation? You have to understand. All method and technique is a series of instructions to do things. Agree or not? If it's a series of instructions to do things, it's definitely not Noble Eightfold Path. You understand? That's why it's not a meditation. Then what is the object of meditation? There are a lot of objects of meditation. But what is the purpose? It's for you to anchor your mind so that it is not heedlessly wandering off or thinking. Anchor your mind means you're supposed to be mindful of this meditation object. That's why anapanasati is mindfulness of the in and out breath. And your breath is part of your kaya, is your meditation object. Do you understand? So you're supposed to develop mindfulness of it. That's why it can anchor your mind so that your mind is not lost in thought, not heedless. Otherwise, you cannot, because your spiritual faculties are not there. When your spiritual faculties are not there, the five mental hindrances take over. That's why it hinders your mind from entering the meditative state, which is the silent mind, mindfulness or awareness. The reason why you are not peaceful and not able to be in the state of awareness is because you don't have the spiritual faculties. And when you lack spiritual faculty, the mental hindrance arise and they will hinder your mind from entering that meditative state. Without hindrance, you are automatically aware because the spiritual faculty is there. And this is key to understanding meditation. That's why this first part, meditation must be done with understanding, is very important. Otherwise, you become gullible. But people don't understand all this. So what they do? They take the method and the technique as the meditation. They take the object of the meditation as very important. Then what they do? Instead of developing mindfulness, they go and focus and concentrate on that object. You develop energy field, ending up in concentration, samatha, jhana, and all those things. Then they go and disguise through their own foolishness and gullibility. They create concept of vipassana. Then they come up with all the noting, all the method and technique to do vipassana, thought-based, hoping to realize the enlightenment that is beyond thought, beyond mind. How can you do it? Completely, you are lost. You are actually lying to yourself, wasting your time. That's why whatever you do with thought, you will not be mindful. You can be very peaceful, very calm, focused, concentrated. But that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. That is not heedfulness. Because they cannot control their mind. The mental hindrance make them heedless. So what they do? They go and use the object of meditation or method and technique to focus and concentrate so that this mind doesn't run, doesn't move. Then sometimes they go into absorption. Very strong, continuous mindfulness. Absorb the mind into it to develop calmness, peacefulness, so that they have no thought. Then their meditation is about developing peacefulness. When they are more calm and more peaceful, they say good meditation. But the whole of meditation is to develop wisdom to free your mind. Nothing free your mind except wisdom. If you don't have the silent mind to insight into phenomena, to awaken to the universal characteristic, which is vipassana, that is not meditation as taught by the Buddha. That's why within the Noble Eightfold Path, you have the four foundations of mindfulness. You have the sati, path factor. Sati and samadhi. These two, when they combine, they will enable you to see things as they are and insight into phenomena and awaken. That's how wisdom come about, panya. So hopefully by now you understand why method, technique, and object of meditation never defines the meditation. Then what are they? What are they? They are just skillful means to train your mind. Understand now? So always remember this. They are just skillful means to train your mind. Be mindful so that it's not heedless. Then you have to stabilize it. Eh? After that, you have to stabilize it. So that it is ever mindful. When it's ever mindful, this is the meditative mind. This is the meditative mind. This is the silent mind, huh? Or silent mind. And this mind can meditate. And this is what you need to understand. And this is what I have been trying to teach you all and share with you all this while. But I don't know why you all find it so difficult to understand. Is it clear? If it's not clear, you can ask. Yeah? But today I have a lot of time. It's just this topic. Yeah. So, why do you need method and technique and object of meditation? It's because your spiritual faculty are not developed. If your spiritual faculty is developed, you don't need all this. Your mind straight away enters sati and samadhi because of the spiritual faculty. The sadha and virya is very easy. Faith in the Buddha and his teaching. Then when you understand who the Buddha is, how wonderful his teaching is, you will strive on with heedfulness to cultivate, to train yourself, to be mindful. That's how the spiritual faculty start with sadha, leading to virya, spiritual zeal, to go this way. But you see the importance of this teaching. It not only can liberate your mind and free you from all suffering, it can even bring about the enlightenment, the transformation in you to understand life, to live the spiritual life of peacefulness, love, compassion, wisdom, understanding. Then when you understand life, you know how to live life to the fullest. And you will know how to appreciate life. Then you can experience all of the beauty and wonders of life that follow this understanding. That's why you will go all out, strive on with heedfulness, with the virya, to cultivate. Then you just cultivate. Cultivate is to develop the ability to be mindful. To develop the ability to be mindful is very easy. The Buddha has taught you many things. The four foundations of mindfulness is the most important. He said, any object of meditation you can start. What is recommended in the four foundations of mindfulness is anapanasati. He said, you start with anapanasati. Train your mind to be mindful of the in and out breath. Your in and out breath is always in the present moment. If you are aware of it, you are without thought. That's how piti can arise, sukha can arise, leading to the very still and quiet mind, called pasati, which is an enlightenment factor. Then when you stabilize pasati, it becomes samadhi. And this is how the enlightenment factors come about. So this is how you train. And the Buddha also mentioned, after you have developed this anapanasati, you are able to be mindful, stabilize it, until you are ever mindful. Then, before you use it to cultivate noble eightfold path, he advised you to stabilize it through kaya nupassana. Kaya nupassana means anchoring all your mindfulness, your daily activity, to your bodily activity. First, start with the four posture. Standing, away. No need to do anything. Just body and mind as one. Feel it. Attentive, aware, inside. Walking, aware. He never say walking, not intention to walk. Where got such thing in the teaching? Who knows? The thought knows. And you are creating more thought. You're supposed to be silent in that state of awareness. That's why when you bending, stretching, turning, all aware, mindful. Paying respect, mindful, aware. Body and mind move as one, no thought. Then sitting, aware. Lying down, aware. The four posture. Then after that, the third category of practice under kaya nupassana is sati sampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all movement in the present moment. And the Buddha mentioned it very clearly. Standing aware, looking forward aware, bending, turning, doing whatever action away. Then putting on the shoulder cloth, your monk's robe or your clothing, fully aware. Then blinking of eye, turning of hand, everything. Then even later on, answering nature's call, your action, your movement, connecting activity within the four postures, fully aware. And this is the real meditation. This is daily mindfulness. You cannot be in the state of awareness in the midst of life. You are heedless. And the heedless are as if dead, buried in mind. No amount of formal meditation can free you. Most of the formal meditation end up in thought-based, energy field, calmness, peacefulness. But doesn't mean formal meditation is not important. Formal meditation is important to stabilize your mindfulness, to develop pacity, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind. Then after you have stabilized it, when your mind enters sati, you have to do until your mind enters sati. Then you have to carry this state into your daily life. Then everything you do, you are in a state of awareness, mindfulness. And this can be done. It's not difficult. But because you all never try, never develop the understanding, you are gullible. You want vipassana. You want jnana. All the big names, but you don't understand what they are. And you very keen to go for shortcut. People tell you, hey, this method very good, this technique very good, this monk very good. Very fast you go into jhana. That's how people become gullible and get lost. The training is not difficult. It's very easy. But the moment you are mindful, that is the beginning of meditation. That's why without sati, you are as if dead. Because without sati, you cannot be mindful. Without mindfulness, you cannot be heedful. And without mindfulness, you cannot cultivate many things. Even keeping precept, you can't. You cannot be aware of your mental intention. You cannot be aware of your mind state. The four foundations of mindfulness, aware of feeling, citta, content of consciousness, and dhamma. All this you cannot do without mindfulness. That's why you have to have this stability of mindfulness. When you have the stability of mindfulness, you hardly think. There is hardly any thought. Little or no thought. Most of the time, you are just aware. And because of that, your mind is different. It's heedful, fully aware. This is heedful living. There is clarity. No more like before. Think a lot. Worry a lot. Chattering. Verbalizing. Complaining. Reacting. That's why you are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. Reacting to life. So much so you never leave life. That is the problem. So mindfulness can be developed in many ways. The Buddha say in your puja, when you pay respect, when you chant mindfully. When you make offering your puja, you do it mindfully. When you rejoice mindfully. When you listen attentively, which is mindfully. And this is all the various daily mindfulness practices that you're supposed to do. When you are sitting, you must be aware. When you are listening attentively, you must be aware from within. Then smell, taste, tactile, everything. Then when you go back to sleep, it's the same. As you walk, you are mindful. Every action, every movement in the present moment. If you cannot be in that state, you don't stand a chance because there is heedlessness. There is no more mindfulness. Can follow? I hope this is clear by now. Then there is another aspect about this particular topic. When you understand that nothing frees your mind except wisdom. So how do you develop wisdom? Wisdom is an awakening, not using your thought to go and look for it. You know what people do or not in the name of meditation? They meditate. Then they experience something. Then they use their thought to recall through memory. Then they check with the Dhamma knowledge that they have. Then they say, that is impermanent. The insight don't come this way, understand? No? When that silent mind awakens, there is no word, nothing. Sometimes they use the word the aha moment. The former mind just awakens like that. It just understands. Without thought. That's why you cannot know, you cannot hold blood, you cannot hold on to the concept of enlightenment. You remember Ananda, after the Buddha passed away, they need him to be one of the 500 arahant to be eligible for the first council. He strived until so hard because he don't understand what the Buddha meant by strive on with heedfulness. He go and strive to become an arahant. And Ajahn Chah also wrote in his temple, don't try to become an arahant. Because that craving, that wanting to be an arahant, create problem for him. So what happened was, towards the end of the day, almost dawn already, he just give up. Because he knew no more time. Forget about it. So he want to lie down to take rest, to prepare for the next morning. So as he completely free his mind, not holding on to the striving to become an arahant, to become enlightened, the mind become a free mind. Then he enter the state of a free mind, and because he has the understanding, without knowing that he already has the understanding, once the mind doesn't hold, doesn't grab, doesn't dwell, doesn't cling on to anything, this mind enters cessation straight away. That's why as he lie down, before his head touched the pillow, he became an arahant. And this is how enlightenment can happen. In the midst of your daily life, with a free mind, not holding on to anything. That's why the Six Patriarch Sutta, Hui Ning, when he heard the Diamond Sutta, said the mind must have no dwelling. He straight away came to great awakening. How did he do it? Because he realized he was born without a mundane mind and his mind never dwelt anywhere. That was his essential meditative state, the true mind. That's how without the true mind, you don't stand a chance. It can never insight into phenomena. It can only awaken through silence, not through the heedless thinking mind, chattering, verbalizing. The mind that has a lot of wanting, craving, desire to be enlightened, busy practicing, cultivating. This mind is the mundane mind, and this mind cannot awaken because the Dhamma is akaliko, beyond thought, beyond mind. How can you use the instrument that is lower than what you want to realize? Which is thought. If it's within the field of thought, you are trapped in thought. You can never go beyond thought. That's why to realize akaliko, you can't. And these are all the important, essential understanding that living being never understood. The cultivator also seldom understood. That's why you all find it so difficult to meditate. To develop the understanding to meditate. And I don't know why it's so difficult to you all. Well, to me, it's very straightforward, very clear, very simple. And I've been trying to actually, what I should say, assimilate this understanding to you all this while, even at the retreat, at the talk, at the sharing. This has been repeated and repeated and repeated. But people somehow cannot get it. Because you are so conditioned by what you have been taught. You think you must meditate. And who meditate? There must be a mind to meditate. But you don't know that there are two minds. You are only familiar with the mundane mind. That's why just now Brother Te say, you need a mind, the mind awakened. Yes, but which mind? There are two minds. The mundane mind can never awaken. is the true mind that awakens. But when the true mind awakens, because the form and mind is connected to it, the form and mind will realize itself and cease. It will not be a problem anymore. And the moment the mundane mind, thinking mind cease, your true mind arises, your true nature arises. That's how you awaken. That's how you can become enlightened. And the enlightenment is the form and mind enlightened. But that form and mind is not you. It's dependent originating, condition arising, karmically conditional for you to come to this world. This is the vehicle and the tool, this segmented life for my mind, for you to come. And this one is not you. That's why you cannot say you are enlightened. There is nobody inside there. But the former mind connected to the true mind, the true nature, when the true mind awakens, the wisdom is there. It will enable this form of mind to understand. Then this form of mind is like enlightened because of that awakening from the true mind. So this is the true understanding. I hope after today, this will be very, very clear to all of you. That's why when I saw that topic that Brother Khan sent to me, I straight away say, okay. I didn't even say sadhu, because I knew this is the topic that many people fail to understand. And it's in fact a very good topic so that I can explain all these things clearly to you all, once and for all. Then after you have understood this, you reflect back, I tell you, you will laugh yourself. How come so stupid, so easy, so clear, so cannot see? Take us so long. That one I leave it to you to find out yourself. But to me, by nature, it's very clear. That is the teaching. That is what the Buddha is pointing at. How come people cannot understand? Your problem is because you are so used to the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the thought process. You fail to realize the other mind, which is your true mind, the silent mind. Because your mind cannot be silent. Your spiritual faculty are not strong. That's why your spiritual faculty fail to help you to do away the mental hindrance. And most of the time, throughout the day, when you are living life, in the midst of life, you are completely heedless. Most of the time, I should say. Unless you're really a cultivator who understand and develop the stability of daily mindfulness to be ever mindful. Otherwise, you can't. The moment you walk out of this place or out of the meditation place, your mind wander like anything, become heedless again. It start to stir, react, and do your usual thing again. Even in the retreat, you go and check. You think a lot. You verbalize a lot. You got a lot of theory, a lot of concept, a lot of gullible thinking. You talk to yourself a lot. Verbalization inside, verbalizing to yourself, chattering. Then you got a lot of reaction through sense experience without you even being aware. But when you are mindful, you are different. The mind cannot do all this. Initially, when you are aware of its movement, then you realize this is what heedlessness is all about. Then you realize you are hardly mindful most of the time, throughout the day, less than 5 minutes a day. Most of the time you are lost in thought, heedless, not with the moment. When you realize that, that is the beginning. Then you determine to be mindful, to be aware. Then you seriously cultivate. That is how meditation come about. And to be aware that you are heedless is the beginning of training the mind to be aware. You have to be aware that you are not mindful. The moment you are aware that you are lost in thought means the awareness is there, even though just for that moment. But later on, as you develop more and more understanding, you look back the teaching, the most important one is the dependent origination, paticca samuppada, the dwelling. The first two links, avijja paccaya sankhara, contemplate and reflect on that. Why did the Buddha say dependent on ignorant? Ignorant means ignorant of the truth. Wrong view. Sankara activity, mental activity, thinking arise. This is the meditation. If you don't straighten your view, reduce your delusion, your wrong view, your avijja, your mind always think, it will always be heedless. It's only after you learn to straighten your view through a right understanding, ability to see things as they are, accept things as they are, accept the world for what they are, accept living beings for what they are. Whatever condition that arise, like the Buddha said, there are causes and conditions. If condition like that, things will be like that. I have to accept. I have to accord and flow. I cannot resist. The moment I resist and wanting my way, I will suffer. Because this is nature's law. When you start to develop this type of understanding, straightening of view, then every moment of sense experience, you become different. When you see something, you no longer like before react, verbalize, comment, judge, chatter, and do other things. No more. You can have that mind that is in equanimity with the right understanding to accept things as they are, to see things as they are, to accept them for what they are. Then you have more and more moment of peace. Then your mind does not oscillate between like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. These are all mental hindrance, sensual desire and ill will. The first two, very powerful. Not until in the midst of life you can attenuate this and reduce this, until you hardly stir and react, you have not really started the meditation. Because when you can attenuate the first two mental hindrance, that is the beginning of real meditation. Then only you can be more and more mindful. So when you got less wrong view, less reaction to sense experience, you got less thinking, less verbalizing, less judgment. Yeah. Then you can silence and that mind can stabilize. And when that mind stabilize, it has samadhi. Samadhi is collectedness of mind, unwavering mind, when your mindfulness is very stable, when you are without thought. Impassity, still, silent, fully aware. Then that one cannot stir because the stability of mindfulness enable you to have that samadhi, the collectedness of mind, the unwavering mind. So when you live life with that samadhi, in the midst of life, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, tactile feel or arise any thought through memory, your mind does not stir because it is collected and unwavering. Then you can see things as they are and you will be so aware and mindful that the memory does not come and interfere. That's like acting according to my memory is not acting at all. Your memory is full of your attachment, your craving, your views, your opinion, your desire, your fear, your scars of memory, your phobia, your happy moment and unhappy moment. So all this is going to condition you to act. That's why acting according to memory is not acting at all. Then you will come to another understanding through the Dhamma way, where you act according to Dhamma understanding. That's why you act according to wisdom, understanding, Noble Eightfold Path. No more the old way of heedless conditioning, reaction to mind, all from your conditioning, your memory, your views, your opinion, your religious belief system, all of your traditions, education and everything, the media, whatever that condition you into having that type of views and opinion. That is how you act, from the bundle of memories. You don't have wisdom to enable you to act. That's why you have to act with understanding, wisdom, not acting according to memory, according to your fear, your selfishness, your phobia, your greed, your emotion, your insecurity. All this is not acting at all, because these are evil roots, roots of all evil. Okay, I better stop here. Huh? 1 hour plus a bit. Huh? So I hope tonight's sharing is useful. Huh? And go back and do listen to it attentively to develop the clear understanding. Then if you got any question, you can ask. Yeah? Yeah, you are free to ask. Okay, I hand the mic back to Brother T. Yeah. The other wireless one is without battery on. Oh, can work. Then pass to Brother T.
Thank you, Brother Teo. So, any question from the floor?
So everything understood, huh? No question. That is a good one. I think by now it should be clear, huh? Easy for you all to understand. If you still don't get it right, you better go back and write it down. Reflect, contemplate, listen. Then when you have the whole thing mapped out with the understanding, then you follow this understanding and meditate, which means you fulfill the first condition. Meditation must be done with understanding. Then you progress very fast. You won't have a problem. Because you meditate with this understanding, you will progress. You will understand. The moment you are without thought, you're already aware. You don't have to practice awareness. You don't have to try to be aware. All this is reintroducing the thought process, making the thought active again. Then how are you going to be mindful? The moment thought is active, there is no sati, no mindfulness at all. Your mind can only do one thing at a time. Either it's lost in thought thinking, heedless, or it is silent without thought, fully aware. Only these two. You ask yourself, what state of mind you are in? Moment to moment life passes by, that is the only reality. What are you doing? Every moment, every instant, what are you doing? Are you aware, mindful? Are you with the moment in silence? Or are you constantly thinking, lost in thought? Too busy thinking, planning, worrying about life, reacting to life? So all this, you will come to understand. Then you will appreciate meditation differently. Then when you have the understanding and meditate with understanding, you progress. I tell you, you will have a lot of joy. Then you will come to realize that sati is not what people think. Because when you develop this understanding and meditate accordingly, when sati comes, your form and mind will know. Because your form and mind is connected to your true mind. So when you are in sati, when the true mind is there, the form and mind will know what that thing is. Then you realize throughout the day you are aware, mindful, no longer like before. Heedless, think a lot, worry, planning, scheming. Then like you got a lot of things to do. You hardly have any time, yeah, to develop clarity of mind, to reflect, to contemplate, to be aware, to be with the moment, to live life. That's why I say you hardly live life. You are most of the time conscious of life, existing through life. You never live. Yes. Use the mic, yeah, for the recording. Yeah.
Brother Teo, my name is Eng, actually.
Oh, yeah. Nice to know you. Yeah.
Sometimes yeah. I go to this Samadhi Vihara.
Oh, okay. Shalom.
Shalom. So I used to be in this KCBA.
Oh, Klang and Coast. Yeah. I went there to give talk to
earlier with this
earlier. Yeah.
So Actually, I don't really do much meditation because I feel myself also sometimes when I want to meditate, then my mind
restless, think a lot,
many things.
Yeah.
So lately, I also find myself when I try to read any Buddhist
scripture or books,
then my mind start to have this feeling like try to get a deep insight to the meaning of the
reading. Understanding of the teaching. Yeah. Very so, good. That is very good.
So, is it really? I mean, you need to have this, or you just
you need to understand first.
Understand.
That's why the Buddha's teaching got three phases. You allow me to explain this to you. It will help you. The Buddha said Dhamma can be cultivated over three phases. You're familiar with these three terms or not? Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Oh, you're not familiar. No. Okay, the first phase of Dhamma, the Buddha said, is you learn the teaching, the learning of the teaching through reading, through hearing. Eh? This is learning, or through discussion, or attending Dhamma talk. So learning, he called it Pariyatti. I don't know where to write. I write here. Pariyatti. So this is phase one. Learning. Phase one is learning of the teaching. So this is what you are trying to do. It's from your past. That's why the urgency is there, and you like inside that know that you have to understand. So Pariyatti is the first phase of Dhamma. The Buddha said after you understand, you put it into practice. Phase two is Patipatti. Patipatti. I'm not really sure about the spelling. Means putting it into practice. Into practice or cultivation. Then after that, the third phase is Pativeda. This third phase is the most beautiful. Third phase of the cultivation is Pativeda. You reap the fruit of your hard work. Because of your phase one and phase two, you become enlightened. You get to live the life of an enlightened being. So these are the three phases. So now you start with Pariyatti. That's why I say you have to understand first the teaching, the essential Dhamma. When you understand, then you put it into practice, it becomes very easy. Because you cultivate with understanding. You meditate with understanding. And that is how Patipatti come about. Then there are three ways to become enlightened. The three types of wisdom. First, the Buddha say is to hearing. Hearing. During the Buddha's time, there is no books, no writing, no recording. You only can listen to all the talk, those that are repeated by Ananda and the other monks. So through hearing of the Buddha's teaching or the discourse of the Buddha, if you have your past cultivation, if you are attentive and you have the condition, the sharp mind, you can awaken. And that type of wisdom is called Suttamaya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. After hearing the discourse of the Buddha, you awaken. That is called first turning wisdom. Wisdom born of hearing. Then if you cannot awaken after you hear, like my sharing and all those things, then you go for the second turning, the Buddha said. You can reflect, contemplate, and inquire into what you have heard.
When you reflect, it allows you to understand it in more deeper aspect. It's just like you try to stabilize what you have heard, then slowly assimilate it. That is the second turning wisdom. It means after constant reflection, contemplation, inquiry into the teaching, why did the Buddha say this? Why did the Buddha define the Four Noble Truths as the essence of his teaching? And what are these Four Noble Truths? Why did the Buddha say under the second turning of the Four Noble Truths that this Noble Truth of suffering is to be understood? Then how can I understand it? You just inquire, reflect, contemplate. As you do this, it will guide you to understand, where you will reflect on life and relate this teaching to life. Then you will start to understand what the Buddha meant by the First Noble Truth Reality, the Eight Conditions, birth, old age, sickness, and death is suffering, because you reflect on all this process, separation from a loved one, from whatever things that you hold on to dearly, your loved ones and all those things, your possession, your money, your wealth, your property, is suffering. When you are with people whom you don't like, it's also suffering. And you can check on all this. When things don't go your way, when you cannot get what you want, when your expectations in life are not met, that is suffering. So you inquire, is it true? And then you recall, oh yeah, last time when I lost my loved one, I was so sad. Then when I encounter disease, sickness, getting old, fearing death, it affects me. So all this you can reflect and contemplate. Then you start to understand the teaching. And this is second turning. So if you develop understanding after reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into the teaching, the Buddha called this type of awakening or wisdom Chintamaya Panya, means wisdom born of the second turning, born of reflection, contemplation, and inquiry into his teaching. Then the third turning is called Bhavana Maya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Bhavana is the meditative discipline. So when you meditate according to what he has taught you, then you awaken through the direct seeing, through insight into phenomena. And that one is very penetrative. That is the third turning wisdom. They call it Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of Bhavana, or meditative training, the meditation. Okay, you can continue now. Yeah. So you are on the right track. Yeah? You're going through phase one, which is very good. Yeah.
Thank you.
Any more questions from the rest?
Yeah. Our sister there, yes.
Hi, Brother Teo.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about the daily mindfulness.
Oh, very good. Okay.
I have tried that. I see things that I doesn't like. And I can see myself got two person inside.
Yeah.
One is
very
telling
good.
Me to be, yeah. Don't react, be pleased with it. Another one say, show your anger, please, show. And after that, I was like tired out.
Yeah,
and I have migraine.
Oh, okay.
Brother Gil, can you explain?
Luckily you asked. I will explain to you. You see, initially when you do daily mindfulness without proper understanding, you will have this problem like what she went through. And what she went through is very, very normal. Because she starts to be mindful. Then she starts to be mindful of all the negative tendency. Then she realized there are like two personality inside there. One is trying to be the good one with the Dhamma knowledge. Let things be all those things. But the other one is the deluded one. The one that has been there for very long. Emotional. Want to do all this sort of thing. So these two are still from the same source. Mundane mind. Understand that? That's why the Buddha say, mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arrives, all this arise. And these are still conditioned thought. because it's from the thought. The thought tell you this, the thought tell you that. Then what happened to you is you use too much thinking because you think you are aware of the thinking. You are not aware of your thinking. When you are aware of your thinking, you are not involved with the thinking. You understand that point? You have become emotional, involved in the thinking. You are no longer aware. So don't worry, very easy to come out of it. Because when you understand, like I used to explain, luckily you create the condition. The most important thing I have forgotten to share with you, which I always share, when you meditate, like our brother there just now, he said, he don't like to meditate. Every time he meditate, a lot of thought. Because this comes from your daily life. When you are heedless most of the time, throughout the day, you will have this hindrance, mental hindrance, creating all the habitual thinking, the habitual tendency, reaction of mind. So this thought will arise. So in meditation, the most important thing is when you are aware and mindful, when thought arrives, let it arise. Always remember, don't fight, don't suppress, don't try to control. Never go and create a like and dislike for what happened. You know, what happened is natural, like the Buddha said. When condition is like that, things will be like that. The untrained mind think a lot. The mind that have not have the spiritual faculty will think. So let it think. When you let it think, don't suppress it, don't control it, and don't try to do anything with it, what will happen to your mind? You don't feed it with any more thinking, mental energy. You are not reacting anymore. You can accept the reality of that thinking mind, that mundane mind. So when you have that ability to accept, means you just relax, silent, and maintain the awareness. Let the thought arise. Then just maintain awareness. Awareness means whatever tactile consciousness, aware, finish. Don't even try to know, just aware. You want to say this is non-focusing. Maybe this is non-focusing. But you must understand that is the true mind. Just aware. And you can be aware of many things. Your heartbeat, whatever. Sight, sound, all the tactile. Every moment of consciousness. Just aware. Finish. Aware. Aware. Let it fall away. Then after a while, this thinking, which is a habitual tendency, will start to slow down. Slow down. Slow down. It's like the momentum of thinking comes from your delusion, your heedlessness, your mental hindrance, from your mind that try to stop all this. The more you try to stop the thought, the more active is the thought. Where you are trying to reason with it until you are so tired, until you get migraine. When you understand, you are not supposed to do all of this. You're supposed to be aware. Don't try to know. And the awareness will let you know. That's why it will let you understand how you function as a human being. How your mind stir, react. Then you will trace back the origination factor. It's after you see something or you hear something or you smell, taste, tactile feel or thought. Recall something. It's through one of your sense though. Then because of your wrong view, you stir your mind. That's why anger was not there before you have anger. Fear was not there before you have fear. All this uncomfortable fighting inside your mundane mind was not there before they arise. How do they arise? They arise because the mundane mind has learned new things and create two types of opposing opinion. So forget about the mind. It comes from the same source, mundane mind. Forget about it. Don't try to whether cite this or cite that. Both are still creation. Both are still opinion, views. You're supposed to develop the silent mind to be aware, to understand all this. How your mind gets conditioned into all these mind states. How it become like that, have this type of views and opinion. Then how it become conflicting. All through knowledge that you pick up. Even when listening to Dhamma without understanding, it becomes knowledge, understand? But when you understand, it's no more knowledge, because the key thing is aware. Aware means don't think, don't get involved with the thought process. Just aware. When anger arises, like the Buddha said, citta nupassana, you must be aware that anger has a reason. Just like the Dhamma nupassana, mindfulness of the five mental hindrances. When the mental hindrance or sensual desire or ill will or restlessness of mind arise, you must be aware. Aware means what? Don't try to do anything. Just aware. Then when you continue to silence your mind and maintain awareness, what happens is this condition arising, mental hindrance, with sensual desire and ill will, even restlessness of mind, or doubt, or sloth and torpor, they will cease to be by themselves. Because when you don't create the duality of like and dislike, which are mental hindrance, there is nothing to hinder your mind from becoming restless. From entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. Then sati take over. When sati take over, your mind become quiet, peaceful. Then you realize, the mental hindrance is gone. That's why the Buddha say, you will come to understand how the arisen mental hindrance cease to be by not doing anything, by just following the third way, aware, silent. Then it will cease. But this one is just a temporary understanding, measure, which means every time you have problem, you get angry or fearful or restless, you come back and meditate, silent your mind, and you become peaceful again. But then you cannot live life. Where every time you have to come back in the form of meditation and silence yourself. But this is better than people who don't know how to do this. That's why you can rest, relax, silent, then you become normal again. Then you go out. Then the Buddha say, after this, you have to move on to the fourth way to overcome mental hindrance. The fourth way is to trace the origination factor, like just now I mentioned. How did it arise? Before you have the hindrance, they were not there. Before you have fear, restlessness of mind, they were not there. Then how did it arise? Before you are angry, there was no anger. So you trace. After you saw something you don't like, like you see a lot of things inside there you don't like. So that is aversion, anger. Then it creates thinking. That's how you have migraine. Because when you think, you are at the brain. And energy will out. And you feel very uncomfortable. That's how it becomes migraine. What you need to do is relax. Forget about this. So when you trace the origination factor, then you realize this is due to your wrong view. Reacting to what you see. You are not supposed to judge, react, or comment on what you see. You are supposed to understand what you see. Understand means you trace the origin. Yeah. Why I still react and become angry, emotional, fearful, restless? It's because I got wrong view. I cannot accept the reality of the mundane mind, the untrained mind before it awakens. Things like that. It's like that. If I accept means I'm at peace. You understand? Then no more like very, very they call it sanfu, akanko inside there. No more, because you can accept. The untrained mind is like that. The conditioned mind is like that. When I accept, I'm at peace. When I'm at peace, I'm silent. Then I know how it come about. Yeah, last time I cannot accept this. It's because I thought this was me. Like you say, I got two minds inside there. One wanting to do this, one wanting to do otherwise. That's why there is conflict. Actually, both came from the same source. Deluded mind. Mundane mind. So when you understand that, both cease to be. Because the true mind don't think. The true mind just aware. Then, and when I'm aware, I straighten my view. I'm not going to be like before. I'm going to follow the Buddha's way. I just relax into it, silent. Use the third way to allow it to cease. Then when it ceases, I come to a very clear understanding, very important understanding, like the Buddha said. The original state of mind before the stirring
was already peaceful, aware, still. That true mind, tranquil. The true state of the true mind is silent, aware, tranquility, stillness, peacefulness. You don't have to do anything. The moment you are without thought, without reaction, without stirring, that original state comes back to be. Just like swimming. When you know that your body is lighter than water, means the natural state of this body is buoyancy. So if you want to learn how to swim, you don't have to struggle to keep afloat. You must trust that you are lighter than water. Then you don't do anything. The body will sink, then the upthrust will push it up. Then when you reach the surface, you realize, yeah, I don't need to do anything. The body will float. Meditation is the same. The true mind is already the meditative mind. I don't have to do anything. I just silent aware. I will realize the true mind. Because the natural state of that true mind is without thought. Without thought means no emotion, no concept, no reality, no hindrance, nothing, no views, no opinion. It's just aware. And this is the silent mind that can awaken. So after you have traced this origination factor, you can retrospectively reverse it. Well, last time I was wrong view. Now I have right view. I can accept all this reality. And I know that these are not real. I just let things be. Then it ceases to be. After it ceases to be, you must realize that anger gone, everything gone. That is your true mind. Original state before the stirring, before the heedless thinking, before all the views, opinion come into condition you. That's why you act according to this understanding, this wisdom. Your mundane mind will be free. And it will not affect you anymore. And it's just as easy as that. But initially, you have to reflect on this many times because your old thinking, your habitual tendency will keep on coming back. Sometimes through the back door. Sometimes after a few months, you already overcome. Then suddenly, it will come and test you. For no reason, it will make you restless like anything. Then the mind like beyond your control again. Your mindfulness like gone again. That is the real test. When it comes to test you, if you panic, or they call freak out, you will not be able to pass that test. Then it continue to come and disturb you. But when you understand, you just laugh at it. Restless, lah. Want to think lah. Let it think. When you can accept and don't react, the peace will come back. No more mental hindrance. Sati, the spiritual faculty will come back, fall into place. Then straight away, all this gone. That's how you pass the test. And the test can be very severe sometimes. I went through it during the early days, the early years. And when it came, I just laughed. Then I relaxed, silent. It ceased to be. Sometimes for no reason, after many months, you are so mindful, aware, throughout the day, all of a sudden you lose everything. The mind just, like, refuses to obey you anymore. Not its normal state anymore. And yet, you have to go through the test. That is the test. And sometimes it may involve somebody very close to you or something very personal, very, very, like, important to you. Then the test, when it comes, you have to develop the wisdom to really clear it. Otherwise, it will still come back and haunt you. So cultivation, when you don't understand, can be very tough, not easy. But when you understand, it's very easy and you can clear. That's why you need people who have the understanding, the experience to guide you. Having a good Dhamma friends, a good teacher who has the Dhamma is very important. Because if they don't have the Dhamma, they themselves also can't help themselves. How can they help you? How can they lead you to free you? Not easy. Okay? Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Very good. Means you have tried very hard. Very good. Because you have determined until your mind is willing to be tormented with this type of mindfulness. Luckily, you asked. That's why I said, you don't ask, I cannot. There is no condition for me to explain. And a lot of the things that I'm supposed to share also cannot come out. The most important is the thought. Let it come out. Don't fight it. Don't resist it. Laugh at it. Accept it. Understand? The untrained mind is heedless. That's it. Finish. Accept it. Then the activity will slow down. Through your silence, you will know. Then silence, which is aware, take over. Mindfulness take over. And when mindfulness take over, you will enter the calm, peaceful state. And the silent mind. Suddenly you will reach a stage where all the activity of mind, the thinking, like initially slow down. Then your awareness is aware. That time you have a lot of joy, but don't be too excited and complacent. Then you come out of it, you will lose everything. But you continue to relax, silent, and have the joy. Then do you know what will happen or not? Yeah. I don't know whether it's good to tell you first or let you experience it yourself. Which one you want? Experience yourself. Or speak up. There are two types of people. Some want to know first one, but they won't get trapped on. Then when they realize it, they will know one. I'm that type that want to know first one. Then when it go through, I will know one. See, when it starts to slow down, the thinking slow down. There is this joy. You know something is happening already. Then you relax, continue to relax. Then all of a sudden, I tell you, you will never understand what can happen. The whole mind stop. No more thinking. Still. I used to use the word ting. Then after that, no more vibration. It becomes still. Dead still. Not even a ripple. Not even a thought. Everything becomes so still. That is your true mind. You know? The mundane mind still can have contact and all those things. But that true mind is so still. It's like middle of the night when all the traffic no more. You can feel the difference, isn't it? The silence of the night. You can feel that. How many of you have stayed up in the night before? Or study at night? You study at night, you will know. After a certain time when the traffic, all those things, the vibration of nature reduced by a lot, all of a sudden there is a type of stillness of nature. And my two children like me like to study late at night one. They're easier to study. Very quiet. The night is very quiet and easy to go in. So daytime, tired, sleep. Then wake up and do your study. So meditation is the same. When you go through the correct understanding and when you are able to be in the state of awareness, you will realize this stillness, this silence. This is the true mind. This is paucity, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. And that one is very beautiful. But the moment you want to know, you want to understand, you create thought again. Finish. That's why I say don't try to know in the meditation. Relax, silent, and let it be. Then it will continue. There are many things will happen inside there. And you come out, you become beautiful. Then you start to understand that there are two minds inside there. Not what you think. And that mind, which you realize, is very difficult to perceive, to even aware of. But for those who have the understanding and the training and the daily mindfulness, throughout the day, the mind is like that. That is the real meditation. It's not I'm trying to like tell you a story, nothing to do with that. The nature is like that for the last 20 over years. No movement inside. That's why I say, I can come and share, speak the Dhamma, everything, but there is no movement inside still. That nature. Then who speak? How did all this understanding come out? Well, understanding is not from memory, it's not knowledge. Depend on condition, it arises, it manifests straight from the heart. Come out. And when this one come out, it uses the form and mind to create. But this one inside got nothing. It's just that nature that has that understanding. Because this understanding comes from this life's cultivation, connect, then it inherits from the past cultivation. Like the Buddha, the spiritual nature come in. Then this Nimanakaya, the functional body together with the spiritual nature speaks the Dhamma. That's why this one becomes the Dhammakaya. That's how it works. And that one is still completely no movement, no activity, nothing. You can use whatever word because there is no more mundane mind. Last time, that type of mind is long gone, 24 years ago, no more. So this is how cultivation can be developed. Yeah. And it is very beautiful when you come to understand all this. And this is how the mind can understand, can awaken and become different. And always remember there are two minds right there. Don't get yourself confused. Most people are trapped in the thought, the thinking mind, the mundane mind, the condition arising, dependent originating mind. That one is very powerful. That one is egoic, full of delusion, self-delusion, sakayaditi, ignorant, attachment, craving, grasping, views and opinion. That one, a lot of this rojak thing inside there. I call it rojak because all mixed together. Okay, we better end. 10:10 already. So we should thank all those people who asked the good question. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
So, Brother Teo, when you mentioned that there are two minds, hopefully we don't understand it as a schizophrenic. Anyway, sadhu, Brother Teo, for sharing with us the deeper aspect of that question on the board. And I hope that there is much understanding and realization with his explanation. So, as usual, before we transfer merits, I'd like to extend a token of appreciation. So,
we ask Brother Chua and Mimi, the wife. Their family are beautiful, Dhamma family, and they are so kind. Every Friday, almost every Friday, they will provide transport to take me and my wife and some Kayamita to come to your place to share the Dhamma. Then many times he also buy us dinner. So that's why he's very kind and very generous of them. We should rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then your offering, you offer to my nature. My nature offer to him and he'll donate back to your center. Finally, it's like no work done, but a lot of wholesomeness has gone by. So everything is in the heart, in the mind, when you understand. Okay, shall we share merits? Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 hours plus. Less than 2 hours. 8:30, 9:30, 10:30, or less than 2 hours, 1 hour plus. Let us rejoice with all this wholesomeness. Then we will share merits with all beings. Starting with the devas, we rejoice first. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then we will share merits, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkantu loka sasana. Hitta watta chamihi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya idang menya tidang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tidang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you can pay respect to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we end.